Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTE GAA podcast. I'm Mikey Stafford and this is the hurling edition to mark the launch of RTE's championship coverage. We have decided to do not one but two podcasts this week. So we have already recorded the football one. It's out there now. Have a listen to it. We have some wise people speaking on it along with Rory and Tomás O'Shea. It's well worth a listen, but we definitely have wise people with us tonight. We have Ursula Jacob and we have Brendan Cummins to look ahead to the hurling championship, because we are still looking ahead. We're all positive, optimistic types here. How are we doing, guys?
Good, thanks.
Very good, Mikey. Very good.
Good stuff. Well, unfortunately, as I mentioned on the football podcast, we were really going to try not to mention the C word too much, but I think that would be exercise in futility given the couple of days of news we've had. And Ursula, it's to our own county where we have to go first, really. The news that 6 Wexford players in total, 4 footballers, and 2 hurlers have tested positive. More immediate problem for Shane Roach. His baptism of fire as an inter-county manager continues because they're playing Limerick in a pretty much a must-win match on Sunday, whereas Davy has until Halloween night to get things in order. So not panic stations for Davy yet, you'd say.
Yeah, not panic stations, but obviously, you know, not ideal scenario 2 weeks coming into a championship game against Galway. And look, knowing Davy and his management team, they'll try to control what they can control. But, you know, usually coming into a championship match, you're dealing with, you know, injury concerns. And Wexford do have a number of injury concerns, which is another worry. But I suppose all the talk in the last couple of days is obviously the positive COVID test. So, look, they do have a little bit of time still, but it's not ideal because if these players now have to isolate and are away from the setup and the panel and training with the new slitters and, you know, going through things that happen at training that, you know, you need to be there. You know, like Brendan, you know yourself in the lead up to any championship game, like those week to 10 days out from a championship game are so crucial and, you know, so much happens in that time. So Davy will be eager to kind of control what he can control and try to get the injury concerns right too, because, you know, like from what the reports down this way are saying, we've Lee Chin, Matthew O'Hanlon, Sean Murphy, Paddy Foley, like that's 3 of our backs from last year that are seemingly, you know, injured. So Davy will be as much trying to get them right for the game in 2 weeks' time as anything.
Yeah, and you can tell, like, the under-20s have been stood down altogether, which kind of, because of the number of cases there, and that just shows how quickly it can get through a panel. And, you know, if you have to stand down all activity, then you're really in trouble, aren't you?
That's it. And I suppose, you know, Wexford GA, credit to them, are trying to take every precautionary measure at this stage, and they're trying to control it from spreading any further. And from the, you know, from my point of view, you know, watching the Wexford championships, the local club championships, you know, Wexford GA were following things really well. And, you know, it just shows how easily, if it does get into a setup, how it can spread, you know, close contacts, everything. So it just has such a knock-on effect in so many ways if it does get into a panel.
Yeah, you can just see Brendan. Actually, I was looking at one of the local news sites down in Wexford tonight, and they're saying that Gorey is now kind of considered one of the hot spots, and it's a large population area, obviously, in Wexford, and it's obviously a place where a lot of people are employed as well, and there's, you know, the catchment area is massive. So, like, Wexford aren't going to be unique, you'd have to think. And again, hurling maybe just has that little bit of a cushion of those couple of weeks, so counties can maybe, a little bit like Armagh and the football, they had their outbreak a couple of weeks ago and they were kind of settled down, whereas now Davy, if it can be contained, it can be contained. But it's hard to imagine other counties won't suffer the same fate, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And it's difficult because I suppose you can't PPE the players when they're coming in. But I think as a manager, and I know from DeVal with the Kerry setup, you just told the players, act like everybody's infected. So huddles are out of the question. Into the dressing room, drop your gear bag, get out. No more than maybe 2 or 3 in the dressing room while we're doing that. And all physios outdoors, physios PPE'd. makeshift tents set up to make sure that it's well aerated and you don't have to worry about contagion across players. I mean, all those things now are part and parcel of an inter-county management setup. And then you have your COVID officer involved as well. There's obviously an official in the county board. There's a designated one to each panel. You have to have your questionnaire filled in. But I think we do have to change the way we're doing things. All right, there's no spectators, fine. But I think if you go on the premise as a player, getting out of your car on your own, going into training, you're taking it that I'm infected. And I think if you take that stance and stay away as best you can, there will be contact during training. But swapping water bottles, don't be drinking beside, standing beside a fella drinking, shouting into his face while you're having your downtime. I mean, the water breaks are going to be interesting as well, because when you have the water break, the temptation is everybody to clump in together. So it'll be interesting to see the way that pans out when the time comes. So all these little steps we can take and maybe show example to the public looking in that we are taking this really serious, which we are. And if I'm, Ursula said it, if I'm on a Tipperary panel at the moment, the last thing I want is to harm, as in infect, whether it be asymptomatic or somebody has actual symptoms of it, and bring the whole show down. So I think inter-county teams are smart enough. They'd have played a number of challenges over the last month or so. Brush out a few of the cobwebs, see what this thing looks like to do it right. But there is no doubt this is going to be like the Grand National. There's going to be fallers at fences as you go along. You just hope that the whole lot doesn't fall down and affects everybody. And you'll take every precaution. They will, like. I mean, you talk about the elite players in the bubbles. And the only difference between the inter-county player and a Munster rugby player, an Irish soccer player, is that the inter-county player gets up for work the following day. He minds his body the same. He watches what he does. He takes instruction from his management. Those players who are injured or out on isolation, they're on Zoom calls with the management telling them, this is what we expect of you if you're back. These are what the opposition do. This is what your man marker does. So they're still getting information. They're just not physically attending training. But it is going to be something else in a dynamic that's going to make it interesting and dicey and all in the one go for inter-county setups across the country.
You mentioned challenge matches, Brendan. Do you think many more of them are going to take place in the next couple of weeks, or will counties kind of check the mood music and maybe decide that, you know, well, what we've done, and maybe we don't need to be hopping across the borders, considering that there does seem to be some public opinion out there that unnecessary travel now is not a great idea?
Yeah, and to be fair, internal games are going to be a key as well. I mean, if you have 30 or 35 in your panel, make sure that you're getting a good internal game, because obviously it is very, very tricky to be driving around the country playing games and all. But anything you can do to steel your team, because the reality is, COVID or not, and whether you had trouble at home, I got a row with the wife before I was out playing a game with Tipperary in Championship. When I talked out and went into the goals, I couldn't write on the crossbar. I'm not feeling great because I have to go home later on this evening. I don't know what's going to meet me. So people see you on the pitch, you have to perform, and it's as simple as that. So our players will be very, very aware of that as well. And I'm just happy we're in a position where it looks like we're, but we all need to be very, very careful. I think it's going to be very fluid as well through the whole thing.
Yeah.
How important actually, sorry, Mikey, but how important is the COVID officer going to become?
I think the COVID officer is very good, because we're all creatures of habit, Rory. Do you know what I mean? We all slip back in. The good old, what our comfort is. So I think the COVID officer role is to watch around, make sure nobody is slipping back into that comfort zone. And like when you're in a training session and you're going hammer and tongs and you see water on the ground, you want to go over and take a drink. Your first question is that my water or not? You know, and the COVID officer is there to monitor, to watch, to, I suppose, be the principal in the classroom to say, look, lads, you can't do this, you can't do that. And they're there to keep us safe. And the check-in as well on for contact tracing purposes, that app, which is absolutely key now to every inter-county, to sign in, you click the button to say that you are healthy that day, no symptoms. That is done every single time. And the COVID officer would have that on their iPad and they can see every guy you're training. And if you haven't got that click, God help you, all I can say is on the Kerry Hurling front, if you don't have it catching us chasing you, say, you're not getting on that pitch. It's as simple as that. And that's where it has to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And they're like an extension. They're really like an extension on to the whole management and backroom team, because they're there for every part of it now. And they're as key to it as the physio, the doctor. You know, they play such an important role. So as Brendan said, like, they're there keeping you in line and keeping the standards high across the board, whether it's a challenge game, a training session, or a championship game.
We heard this morning the Irish Examiner reported that the Kerry team are travelling by car to Monaghan individually. First of all, fair play that the entire panel know how to drive. That's what I took from that, because down, well, you know, if you're from rural parts of the country, you do learn to drive when you're 17, basically, or there's no escape. So the Dublin, I don't know if the Dublin panel could all drive themselves now, I wonder. But, Ursa, I just wondered, like, when you think about it from the Camogie point of view, like, Wexford are at home to Galway, but we know that the financial backing for Camogie teams isn't always quite on the same level as Mayo inter-county. The cost involved now in travelling, it might not be everybody driving themselves, but it could be two or three buses. It's something that has to be factored in, doesn't it? The logistics here are a different ballgame altogether.
Yeah, without a doubt. And look at, you know, I know from my own county, Wexford, they're always looking to, you know, have added fundraisers, you know, to support the county board. In fairness, you know, businesses and everything are very good at it. But, you know, I saw during the week Paddy Murray, the Cork manager, speaking about when he thought they were travelling up to Offaly for the opening game. And he said, logistically, the amount of additional things he had to consider and think about in terms of travelling and food, water bottles. So it's so many more things.
They took that out of his hands
normal.
Anyway, didn't they? Awfully relieved him of all those worries anyway.
Well, that's it. They'll say the positive out of it. They'll save the expenses from that. But, you know, normally, just say if Wexford were maybe to travel to Galway in the Camogie Championship, we would always travel the night before. So those kind of factors will obviously come into the scenario now, because obviously they'll be discouraging stuff like overnight stays and, you know, long bus journeys and that. So it does have a major impact on, you know, what the Camogie boards decide and what's the safest thing for the players, because that's paramount to everything, the safety of the players. And also, I know myself, if I was going to play a championship game, I wouldn't necessarily like to have to be driving to a match for 2.5 hours and then jump out of the car and perform for 60 or 70 minutes.
Yeah, it's tough going. It was only last night we recorded the football podcast, Roy, but it seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it? You've got a lot more doubt being cast. You know, like, it's Eddie Brennan. Yeah. I suppose we have to mention Eddie Brennan. He's a guard. He's on the front line, as they say. He's a sensible person. You know him better than most. Like, he's not a sensationalist by any means. He's not somebody who looks for headlines. He was, you know, he kind of said, "Are we just taking a bit too much of a risk here? Are we being a little bit silly here with the running off all these?"
Yeah, games? And I think 100%. Eddie is of good skin, very very solid individual, very very measured and considered, and wouldn't be one for hysterics or histrionics in any way, shape, or fashion. So, if he's going to come out and say something, Eddie will have thought it through fairly well. But at the same time, just to kind of reiterate something that I've said from the get go, I do believe that the alternative is a lot worse if the championships don't go ahead. I think, what are you going to do for the next 6 weeks? 8 weeks? Like, you have to remember, we went into a lockdown for 8 weeks in the end, I think it was, back in March, April, and that didn't eradicate the virus at that stage, right? Even though we went into the summer months where everybody was outdoors and we're told that outdoors was a lot more safer. Now, we're heading into a situation where we're going to be blanket banned by Premier League football, probably for the next 6 months, and the virus is going nowhere. It's not like, one of the things that I find very unusual about this whole scenario is everybody seems to think, look, let's just park the bus up for 2020 and let's just come back in January and we'll start all over again. But the last time I checked, the virus doesn't necessarily work off a calendar the same as the rest of us. So I'm not too sure how that's going to work out. Like, this looks like it's going to be with us. And I think Stephen Kenny, the Irish soccer manager, spoke really well about it. This is going to be with us probably in the medium, maybe even the long term, right? So you do have to learn how to live with it to a certain extent. Now, look, I think for me, one of the big things was we managed to run off a massive club program over the summer months. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of players, right? Playing tens of thousands of fixtures across junior, intermediate, senior, ladies football, camogie, Gaelic football, hurling, boys, girls, all the ways up from adult. And there was no issues until we got to the back end when the second wave had begun anyway. And that the GAA seemed to cop some flack for. So you were in a situation where you were able to run a much more complicated program of fixtures across every county. Now you're moving to a situation where it's only about 50 teams in total across both codes. that are working and operating out of an environment that's much more controlled, that has a lot more expense around it, that will have the proper procedures and facilities put in place, that will have a lot of the safeguards and all of the measures that are required to make sure that the players are able to engage in this in a safe manner. And for us to now effectively get to the starting line, which is where we are tonight on Thursday, the 15th of October, and decide that we're going to pull the plug on it as we face into possibly the bleakest winter in our history, would be utterly daft, in my view. Now, if people will say, Sunday game, of course he's going to say that, but I'll stand over it 100%. That's my own view.
Okay. We've dealt with the minor plague, which is coronavirus. Now, let's deal with the serious issue that is threatening hurling this year. Brendan, the yellow slitter. Discuss. Have you pucked the yellow slitter, Brendan?
No.
You haven't?
I have.
You have?
A few of the yellow balls, as the fella says. And look, they're fine. They'll be all right. I'm more of a traditionalist, I suppose. I was happy enough with the colour that it was, but if it's yellow, if it's pink, it's blue, look, it's fine if I'm winning.
Yeah.
I don't mind. Yeah. In a lot of ways, I don't see any problem. I will say, watching players training with and all, it does strike you that you can see it that bit easier. Maybe it's a nighttime training with the lights and all. It does stand out that bit better, like that glow and orb for all the world going around the place. But yeah, look, it'll be fine. I don't think it's going to cost anybody in that Ireland final. It's a different colour. That's grand. Players are professional. Look, I'm not sure. They're still putting the microchip inside the ball to tell us how fast it's going and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Well, sorry, the 2 points, the visibility and the fact that they're going to be smart. But, you know, Owen Murphy, now, who does like to go off on one on Twitter, let's be honest, to kill Kenny Goldsby.
Is this Kenny Keeper, yeah?
Yeah, but he did say that they're like rocks now. So he obviously was at the Fenway Classic in Boston. But Ursula, I don't know if you've had a... Say again?
Yeah, I think the ambition a bit, I think, of the GA maybe to put a few pounds or ounces or whatever it is, measurement onto the ball to stop it travelling 150 yards maybe. And they may be a bit heavier, but we'll only know when the official ones come out and they're used in championship matches. And players like Ursula, you know yourself, the very minute you get to handle one and catch it, all that, you'll know if it's a different. Now, we'll take Owen Murphy's word for it, but we'll wait and see when the proper.
But the thing is, like, everyone is in the same boat, you know. No one's going to be at a greater disadvantage. Everyone found out about the yellow slitters at the same time, so it's not like you can say Tipperary have an advantage over Limerick or Kilkenny or whatever. So it's about adjusting to it. And to be honest, when you're out on the pitch, if, as Brendan said, if you're given a yellow slitter or a pink slitter, the excuses go out the window. Yeah. If you're in front of the goal, you have to either get a goal or a point, or if you're a defender, you have to drive it down the field. And that's the way the managers are going to approach it too, I think. Because there's no point in whinging over it. That they've made the decision and you just have to move forward. And in fairness, Brendan Maher was saying during the week, look, you just have to get on with it. And I think that's what every player has to do.
Yeah. They have had a lot to deal with this year, so we might give the GA a bit of slack that they didn't give a bit more notice, because that seems, Rory, to be Joe Canning's major gripe about it was, why are you telling us 2 weeks before the championship starts that we're going to be using a different slitter?
And I do think it is the point you made there is absolutely essential. You know, like, notice, fair enough, yeah, it is probably something that, you know, you would want to get used to a little bit, but they're pretty busy in Jones's Road at the minute, I'd imagine. They're putting out quite a few fires. So I think getting notice out to Port Tumna about the change of the colour of the slitter might have slipped down their news agenda ever so slightly. And as Ursula said, spot on, she won't care once the ball is thrown in. Like, you're like, you know, you'll chase after it like you would any other ball, and away you go.
That was
one thing that I saw back in the good old days. Now, for people who want to watch black and white hurling, you could get a Newry hurling ball. I hit it out on a Newry hurling ball in Ireland final in 2001. I was wondering where this thing come out of. Then you could have a Cummins hurling ball in the same match and O'Neill's after that. There might be an MD Donnelly hurling ball thrown in around the place as well. So at least it's standard. We all know what we're using.
Standard.
And let's get on with it.
Yeah, I'm sure rumours that Clare have been buying them in bulk to give to randomers behind the goal. Are just unfounded reports at this stage. It was Clare, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Remember that a couple of years ago? Yeah.
When they stole the bag of slitters.
Oh, yes, that was it, yeah. Stole the bag of slitters. They didn't have an extra bag of slitters. They took the bag of slitters. Yeah. Simpler times. Shall we look at a few games, or a few championships, shall we say? This is, as we were describing it earlier, the completely ill-informed and blind predictions that we're going to make now after 7 months of nothing but a bit of club hurling to go on. Brendan, no Mike Casey for this season. Lost. And unfortunately, no Shane Dowling again for Limerick.
And Richie English. Which is two-thirds of their first-choice full back line.
It does weaken them, Brendan, but would you say that Limerick on league form and probably on their average form over the last three seasons are still the team to beat?
Yeah, well, Limerick and Tip, I think, are the teams to beat in Munster, certainly. And maybe when we branch out into the All-Ireland picture, that's what it's going to look like. But Limerick, I think, will have the bit between their teeth, because the last time they were beaten, really, was the All-Ireland semi-final against Kilkenny, and people haven't shut up about it since, about how they were weak on the day and all this stuff. They just got caught out, or whatever the case may be, right? But they will have a game under their belt if they do beat Clare or come in against Tip. But I think either way, as it goes on, I think Tip and Limerick, whoever wins that game, if they meet each other, will be the ones that will win out Munster. They just seem to have the power and strength. But the most interesting tie, maybe, in the other side of it, is Cork and Waterford. And Cork will definitely come, I think, with everything in the bag against Waterford. I'd say they're fed up of listening to people. I've hinted at it myself the odd time that they need to strengthen up a little bit, get more
toughen up. Yeah.
And I think they will do that. I think they have to do that. They'll embrace the conditions. And I know Liam Cahill will sense a huge opportunity for Waterford. Knockout championship, two matches, you're winning Munster, lads, and then you're in All-Ireland semi-final. In the end of November, it is just a huge carrot for those teams. So overall, I think Munster will be as strong as ever, but I think the winners of Tip and Limerick, if they do meet in that semi-final, will be the ones to come out.
Yeah. So there's been the Cork Championship for a few reasons has kind of been what was lauded this year up until the county final celebrations, but we'll leave that for another. We've covered that before. You know, all the matches were being streamed for free by the Irish Examiner, so everybody got to see them. And it seemed, again, as the point was, that they needed to find maybe a few players. And it does seem that, because so many games, such a huge championship, there was kind of a shop window there for people, and the likes of Alan Connolly and Shane Barrett have put their hands up. And it does seem that Cork are back to, you know, rearing hurlers like mushrooms, you know.
Yeah, that's it. And definitely, look, it was a county final to remember. And I think we were all glued to that game because it was just nip and tuck. And it was a great spectacle for Cork hurling in general. But, it's a massive opportunity, as Brendan said, for either Cork or Waterford in that semi-final. Because if they win that game, they're going into a Munster final. Like, for Waterford as well, like, they haven't won a Munster championship match, like, in the last two seasons. So if they haven't got added motivation going into that game, that they need to get that monkey off their back, they need to get back to winning ways in Munster. And no doubt Kieran Kingston as well, he's back with the intention to maybe prove doubters wrong, to prove that Cork are this physical team. You know, the conditions, some might say, mightn't suit this Cork team because they're more of a top-of-the-ground hurling team. You know, conditions aren't going to be the same as they are in May, June and July. They might be that bit heavier. The ball mightn't travel as quick. It might suit the Waterford defence that bit more. It might slow things down. So I think it's going to be an intriguing battle. And I think, you know, Waterford will probably be going in as underdogs in that game. But I actually think Waterford could take Cork in that semi-final.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of positivity down Waterford way, isn't there, Brendan? You know, they've got a new manager who's kind of no nonsense. He's kind of cut out a lot of players who nobody would have expected, who would have thought that they were kind of untouchable, shall we say. And then he's found in Desi Hutchinson. You talk about, you know, kind of top of the ground hurler. You would wonder about Desi Hutchinson, whether he is a quote-unquote winter hurler, but he's a tremendous talent and perhaps the kind of mobile inside forward that Waterford needed.
Yeah, he is. But whatever about Desi Hutchinson, I think if you look up at the spine of the team, yes, Noel Connors was gone. It was a serious statement by Liam Cahill before he even met the panel to announce that Noel was going to be gone. It's certainly, I suppose, said to him that we're not messing anymore here. I'm dead serious about what's going on here. And I think Austin Gleeson, he looked in the club championship this year, talking to guys I know down in Mount Syne. He's certainly fitter, he's trimmer, he's lean, he's hungry for it. He's all those things you want Austin Gleeson to be. And I think when Austin Gleeson plays well, like Joe Canning or Shamie Callanan or Noel McGrath, these lads, or TJ Reid, they bring everybody else along with them. So the team all play better when they're playing well. And their championship fate can be held a bit on how Austin goes. You know, and I think this year he is absolutely ready. And I think we'll see the Austin Gleeson that we saw a number of years ago when he got player of the year. That driving force, non-stop running, energy, no mess and no pulling out of helmets, no slapping anybody, just focused animal. And I think we'll see that with him. And he is going to be a huge difference to Waterford this year. And I would expect him to bring the rest of them with him.
You know, 2 or 3 years ago, he would make you think, he kind of reminded you of a schoolboy. He was like the boy wonder. He looks a bit more like Cristiano Ronaldo now than a schoolboy. He has, he's in serious shape. And judging by, well, yeah, there's a couple of harsh reds, everybody agrees, but he's certainly playing with an edge at the moment, Rory, isn't he?
He always played with an edge, though. He always played with an edge. If you go back to when they beat Cork in the 2017 semi-final, Ursula, wasn't it? He was very lucky he didn't serve a suspension. Was there a pull on the helmet at some point, I think, maybe? And, you know, I think he's had a couple of red cards at even an intercounty level. I that wouldn't necessarily bother me. I think what Brendan said is absolutely spot on. Like, he's definitely the talismanic figure for them. He's their kind of spiritual leader, and if he's humming, I think he will actually lift the sort of standards of all of the other players around him. I would 100% endorse as well what Ursula just said earlier about how Cork have struggled in winter hurling. If you look at their record in the league, particularly, Cork have been atrocious in league hurling. And I think a lot of that comes down to exactly what Ursula said in terms of their inability maybe to grind it out in some tougher conditions, and they're more of a top-of-the-ground team. And I do also think Ursula's spot on. I think it's a very, very slippery fixture for Cork, and would not surprise me in the least to see Waterford come out on top on that one.
Yeah. Just stick with Liam Cahill for a second, Ursula, because Noel Connors did a media event during the week, and he was obviously asked about, you know, how he ended up leaving the panel. And he never met Liam Cahill, never spoken to him. Got a call from Liam Cahill late one night. Liam Cahill asked him, "Are you thinking of retiring?" And Noel Connors said, "No, why?" He said, "Well, I'm not bringing you on the panel this year." And that was it, basically. And I don't think Noel Connors did a whole lot of media before now, because he was probably quite a while kind of processing that. That's Brendan would know well, but Liam Cahill, he's no nonsense by all accounts.
Well, I suppose, you know, Noel Connors went from last year being captain to not even making the panel this year. So such a dramatic change in 1 year. And maybe it just shows the ruthlessness of Liam Cahill. And look, he's proven it with Tip under-20s and under-21. So maybe he just felt he wanted to go in with a younger panel and, you know, try to have the mix between the likes of the Kevin Morans, the Austin Gleesons, and then bring in the younger players. So maybe he wanted to freshen things up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know him well enough, Brendan, I suppose. Judging by previous Waterford managers from outside the county boundaries, you probably do need to be a fairly confident, larger-than-life individual who knows his own mind to take those hurlers on.
Well, you do, and if you think of Liam Cahill, if you think of the senior inter-county adult experience he had, like he went for Tipperary job, was just edged out by some fella called Liam Sheedy when push came to shove. And he would have felt probably that, you know what, I want to be manager of Tipperary. I won 2 under-20s and 21s All-Irelands with Tipperary. Like, it was kind of my turn, and that door closed. But other lads might say to themselves, oh, and they get bitter and get twisted and start giving out. But no, Cahill wanted another project. And I'm sure when the Waterford chairman rang me, thought, hey, bingo, this is it. And when he looked in on that water panel, his job was to make them into the killers, I suppose, that Tipperary would have been, or that Kilkenny would be, and bring that culture. And when he came in first, he just looked around the panel. It's not so much about the personality maybe of Noel Connors. It's just when he looked at him and saw maybe the physique that he had last year, maybe what he thought he wanted his cornerbacks to do, the energy they had to bring to the game, whatever the case may be, he made the decision, and he made it quick and he made it fast. And that's what I liked about him. There was no dilly-dallying, no 2 months, we'll see how it goes and drag it along. If somebody has reached the end of the road as far as your concern as a manager, that is that. and you move on. And certainly Waterford have moved on. I feel for Noel Connors in a lot of ways. It's obviously not a nice phone call to get, but there's many an inter-county player or even club player we're hearing around here that are they'll be listening to this that's saying, why are you a phone call like that? You know, so that's just the law of the jungle.
Yeah. Moving just briefly then before we jump off Munster, Ursula, I think it was James E. O'Connor who described Brian Lowen's hand as depleted, which is probably being generous to him. He's lost Podge Collins, Peter Duggan, John Conlon, and Colm Galvin. He may have to clone Tony Kelly if he's to have any luck in the Munster quarterfinal / Allianz Hurling League final, which is the first match up in the second match up in the championship.
Yeah, in fairness, like, you know, he's had a bit of a streak of bad luck, you know, from having such a positive start to the year, you know, unbeaten in the league, had qualified for the league semi-final, and things were looking really rosy, you know, even the new positions that he was, you know, David Fitzgerald was playing up in the forwards, David McInerney had moved out midfield, Tony Kelly seemed to be settled alongside David midfield, and things were looking really well. And then, I suppose, you know, the devastating news for John Conlon with his knee injury, and then Colm Galvin, and then Ian Galvin wasn't part of the setup, and already Peter Duggan was missing. So you're looking at three or four massive players who've had great influence on that Clare team in the last couple of years. And if you look back on last year's fixture between Clare and Limerick, you know, Clare really struggled to even score from open play, but, you know, it was John Conlon, it was Peter Duggan, sure, these players that were, you know, the leading players trying to keep Clare in the game. And now he doesn't have these guys, and you can't just replace these overnight. It's not like they've had a lead into this game where they can try out loads of stuff. Yeah, they might have had a few challenge games, but they're going in against Limerick, who are going to be, as Brendan said, like mad for this game. The reward is going to be a Munster semi-final against Tipperary with a game under your belt. So that's a positive straight away, but you know, you would feel for Brian Lowen, his first year involved, and he's lost three or four big players.
Yeah. Brendan, there's no way that anybody's looking at Brian Lowen. It's not a one-year thing for him either. You'd imagine this is a job he's craved, and, you know, this is going to be a strange year.
It's really difficult. Yeah.
Mm. It's a shot to nothing for him,
it's
in a way.
Hard. Like, if you're
a championship for everyone.
Yeah, if you're a new manager going in, you know, people buy people, you know, and if you can't have that human contact with your players, and you can't sit down with them, and you can't get your personality across them, and you can't get them to like you or trust you, it's very hard to do that over a Zoom call, you know. And he had a bit of run in the league. He was feeding his way around a little bit, trying to see what way he wanted to play and change the style of Clare, get him a little bit more direct, and all that was starting to happen a little bit. Then you've got all the players that you're missing, and then you've no physical contact with your players. So it's really, really difficult for Brian Lowen. But, like, if I know Brian Lowen, like, when he played, he was late in the face card. Do you know what I mean? He was mad for war. And, I mean, now, you know, he will get them riled up inside the dressing room. He's probably getting riled up in the stand. We'll all see it when he's breaking hurleys off the seats trying to get him going. But, so he will have a proud Clare man about him, known from Loughnane and all. But it is a real uphill battle for Clare now. There is no doubt about that. It'll be the shock of all shocks, I think, they beat Limerick in the first round.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough for so many reasons. They're their close neighbours, their nearest rivals, but they're also arguably the best team in the country. So they could have done with a bit of a lead in. And it's the league final, so, you know, which is what everyone, that's such a strange situation.
But it's a long route as well, Mikey. It's the long route as well. I mean, that's another kind of a mitigating factor. I mean, we spoke about Cork and Waterford on the other side, like, and Ursula mentioned a big prize, and it is a massive prize because you win and you're in the last, you're guaranteed to be in the last six. Yeah. One win and you're in the last six. Whereas it's just that little extra hurdle that you've got to jump when you're on the other side of the draw, which is another mitigating factor against Clare, which, you know, probably is unhelpful given the plight that they currently face.
Yeah. It is funny, we do have to get used to the fact we'd all just got used to the round robin championship. Well, everyone except Waterford people had pretty much got used to the round robin championship, and now we're back to the old fashioned, you know, we've got a two five team championships. And so we'll look at Leinster now. It begins with Dublin and Laois, which is the quarter final by seedings, and the winners get to play Kilkenny in the semi final. Brendan, you'd have to think that Laois are facing an uphill battle here, despite last year Dublin are probably that bit further down the road with Matty Kenny, and they're also the kind of the popular thought out there is that Dublin are whatever the opposite of top of the ground hurlers are. Dublin are, they are big, heavy, hardy men, and they will look forward to a bit of winter hurling. Do you think there's any truth in that logic?
Maybe a little bit. I don't know. I think Dublin, the motivation for Dublin will be that the celebrations surrounded Laois last year, you know, that it was huge for Laois, obviously. But on the other side of a win, there's always a loser. And if you're that Dublin player going up along the bus, watching the journey Laois had after that, you're fairly angry that you'd have felt you let one go. Because in reality, the Dublin players will have felt to Matty Kenny as well that we are that little bit further down the road than Laois last year.
And Brendan, they'd knocked Galway out the previous week. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that was the real sort of, you know, letdown, wasn't it, to a certain extent?
Yeah, it was, you know. The big time, you know. But that's sometimes what happens. If you get a group of players who feel they've arrived to a certain extent, you're at your most vulnerable then. And they realised that, I think, last year in O'Moore Park, when it seemed everything was going wrong. Laois were tearing into them. They were looking, it's a free ref, he's pulling me jersey ref. This kind of stuff was going on. There was a lot about crying going on about it. There won't be any of that this year, and Eddie Brennan will know it. But Laois will be well up for it as well. Like, they know they have to measure Dublin last year. But I do think, though, based on the anger Dublin should bring to this thing on last year's experience, I think they should have enough to beat Laois.
Yeah.
They don't. Going into that pool draw, like Rory said, has been one of the first knockout games. Yeah, the year could be very, very short.
Yeah, Ursula, I suppose we're talking about, you know, the conditions being a factor. Realistically, most inter-county grounds, you're not really talking about the ground being too heavy in late October, early November, but certainly not Croke Park, which is where all the Leinster, all four of the matches are being played. There's probably a school of thought out there that will favour Wexford and Kilkenny to some degree, that, you know, very, very used to it. You could even say the Dublin hurlers prefer Parnell Park to Croke Park on occasion.
And maybe in some ways, you know, Dublin would prefer Parnell Park. But yeah, look, definitely I don't think you're going to really be able to blame the foot conditions in Croke Park. Like, there hasn't been a game there, you know, in how many months. So it definitely won't be from wear and tear at the moment anyway. But yeah, it's going to be equal for all teams. And you know, for Wexford going in against Galway in that Leinster semi-final, I think it's a really tricky game for Wexford. I think they're really going to be up against it. You know, I look back at Galway in that Leinster final when they beat Wexford 3 years ago, and Wexford struggled to contain that Galway forwards. And I'd worry slightly if these injuries that are reported in the Wexford camp, I think Wexford are going to be under pressure against Galway, because that open space, the likes of Conor Whelan, even in the latter stages of the league this year, I know that maybe the relevance of it is not as much, but Brian Concannon was coming in form, you know, Joe Cannon is back. He wasn't playing against Wexford last year, you know, so there's loads of factors to consider there. And I think it's going to be a really tricky test for Wexford.
Yeah, Brendan, no more than Cork. You always get the impression that a good Galway championship, which obviously, you know, they got a good run at it this year, and it's always so competitive that there's always going to be a player or two there who put their hand up. Not that Galway are really short in any department, you'd have to say. And last year was just a bit of an aberration for Galway, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, you'd like to think that's the case, but again, you know.
No, you wouldn't. No, you don't. You don't want to think that. You want them to continue on this terrible run.
I do think Wexford are under that bit of pressure with the injuries, and of course all this COVID stuff now will start to eat up the airtime and eat up, maybe sap some of the energy out of the players listening to it every day, and everyone, are you positive or not? What's going on inside? Is right and different? All that stuff saps the energy out of you, a player. So meanwhile, over in Galway, they're all nice and tidy. They'll be hoping that they don't have anybody on the news talking about if they have any COVID issues. But I do think Galway now, earlier on when we were all locked down, I thought this is ideally set up for Wexford now. This is just a dream, because there's could be three matches, get to an All-Ireland final, you know, loads of energy, Croke Park, it'll be like a runway in there with the speed they'll be able to play the game. But these injuries now, Jay, just, you know, it rose a little bit towards Galway as far as I can see now, you know, with the way things have fallen for Wexford.
Yeah, Ursula, you and I can bemoan this fact, because really, until maybe 2 weeks ago, there was a great school of thought out there that A, you know, kind of the Wexford Hurling Championship had been played off early, gave Davy an idea, time to formulate his plans, even if he didn't have access to his players, because all by two or three of them are were playing football as well. And there was the idea that this is Davy, he's going to pour his heart and soul into this. He's going to have some grand scheme. They're going to come out and kind of, you know, completely reinvent the game of hurling.
Knowing Davy, you know, when he made the decision to come back to Wexford, you know, he will look back on last year. Obviously, it was a great year winning the Leinster title, but Wexford people in general, the Wexford players and the management will look back on last year and look at the huge, you know, regret they have and missed opportunity in losing that All-Ireland semi-final against Tipperary. You know, winning the Leinster and beating Kilkenny was a massive deal, and definitely a county like Wexford want to win silverware. But you know, when we were in the final 10 minutes of that All-Ireland semi-final against Tipperary, and Tipperary showed massive character and showed the strength of their panel too in the fact that the difference the subs made. But Wexford should have finished out that game, and that's something that will be a worry. You know, why didn't they finish it out? You know, do they have the strength and depth in the panel? If any of these games, whether it's against Galway or if they get further, if it goes to extra time, you know, are Wexford going to have the subs to bring on if they need to, if anyone goes off injured? So these are all the things that are going to come into Davy's mind over the next couple of weeks. And no doubt, you know, he is thinking of every scenario and probably has 17 or 18 different game plans going in against Galway. And I do think Wexford are a team that really feed off the presence of a large crowd, and that's going to be missing in Croke Park too.
It would be kind of seem a bit parochial of me to kind of big up the Wexford supporters, but there's no doubt that they go closer to filling Croke Park than any other county for a Leinster championship game. Or what's the feeling, Ursula? You probably saw more the club championship meet. Was there any kind of players unearthed, do you think? Because Davy was pretty settled panel. I think it would have to be a pretty impressive performance for him to kind of draft anybody in at this stage, would it?
Yeah, like the panel does seem pretty much settled. Now, I know a couple of the Shells guys were meant to have been asked in. Now, I'm not sure how much presence they're going to be on the panel, but I know Sean Keane Carroll from the Shell Maliers, like, he's a young guy. One of the young Hearns as well had a great championship. So, like, I don't know, are you taking a big chance or risk bringing in a player that hasn't even played league, senior inter-county league, and then throwing him in to play against, you know, Galway in a championship game? I'm not sure. I think it might be a little bit too quick to bring in anyone. I think Davy will more in line go with what he has and tried and tested so far.
Yeah. Brendan, I noticed we managed to skip through Munster without really talking about Tipperary, so I'd say you're probably pretty keen to talk about Kilkenny anyway. If Tipperary is off the menu,
when we get to final predictions on who we think is going to win the All Ireland, I wager a bet Tipperary are going to feature strongly.
Kilkenny, you know, Brendan, you won't forget, and nobody in Kilkenny will forget how the All Ireland final went. There's definitely a gap between the Tipperary and, you could say, Limerick and Kilkenny. Do you think, if any man can bridge it, I suppose, in, well, I was going to say 12 months, but it's actually more like 18 or 19 months, it's Brian Cody, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And when you say gap, I think Tipperary were probably 7 or 8 points better than Kilkenny in that All-Ireland final. But first 12 or 13 minutes before the sending off, it just accelerated and, I suppose, widened the gap between the teams. But up until then, Kilkenny were going stride for stride with Tip, and They showed a great, I suppose, tactical nous in the way they were shutting down the Tipperary forwards. But obviously then, when O'Mara got the goal and the sending off arrived on then, it just became a turkey shoot in the finish. But look, I saw a lot of the Kilkenny Hurling Championship this year. If anybody, I think, is going to be Tipperary or Limerick, I think it'll be Kilkenny.
Yeah.
Because of that guy called TJ Reid. I mean, he is just sensational. We talked about what Austin Gleeson can do. When Liam Cahill looks around the dressing room at Austin, he's wondering, will he or won't he today? I hope he does. When Brian Cody and every other player in Kilkenny looks at TJ, they just go, I know he will. And that's what he does. And he's so hard to mark. He brings fellas into the game. Colin Fennelly has now learned to stay inside around the penalty area because that suits his skill set. And the boys know how to play it into him around him. So Kilkenny overall, I think now, you know, in this time of the year, it could be pelting down with rain in Croke Park. Hurleys will be slipping, there'll be towels going every direction, yellow balls going everywhere, and it'll just suit
Kilkenny will love that. Kilkenny will love it.
It won't be a running game. There'll be lads slip sliding all over the place. Conor Fogarty will be dragging lads down. There'll be Joey Hope going mad. Cody will be on the line then going like that. Just suits them down to the ground, I think. And I'm telling you, if you ride off Kilkenny on this one, it's at your peril because I think they're the biggest threat to Limerick Tipperary because they'll bring you into the trenches in that kind of a game and they know how to get across the line. They won't panic like.
Here, how menacing is Brian Cody going to look with a face mask on? It's going to be. he'll have the sideline battle won in the first minute. Do you think there's good news, it seems, for Kilkenny at least, Ursula, in Adrian Mullen seems to have made a miraculous recovery from his. Well, not miraculous. He was out for the season in February when we all thought the season would be over in August. So now that the season's starting in October, it looks like he could be fit. And that, like, talking about TJ and Colin Fenley, if you throw Adrian Mullen into that forward line, then you're talking about a formidable force.
Yeah, and you know, he, like, because he's obviously a Ballyhale player too, he instinctively knows where the likes of TJ and Colin Fenley are too. And you know, I think he is just lethal. You know, he's well able to take his own score, but he's very strong in the air, and you know, he's so dangerous. And maybe, like, I'm not saying teams don't, you know, pick him up or whatever, but he seems to get himself into the right position. And I think he learns, you know, from the likes of TJ and Colin Fenley, you know, his positioning is excellent. And he's definitely going to add to that Kilkenny attack. Now, it is a worry, seemingly, that Killian Buckley is injured. You know, he had a very up and down year last year. You know, he was injured for the most part and he just wasn't at the level that's expected and what he would expect from himself. So I think he would be a huge loss if he's not right for that game against Dublin and Laois. You know, he will be a worry for Brian Cody going into that game. But look, who knows? Maybe the injury is not as bad as expected.
Yeah. Okay, we mentioned predictions there. Just before we go on to have a quick chat about Camogie then, I'll start with Rory. Provincial champions and All-Ireland champions.
The provincial champions, I think, in Leinster will be Kilkenny. I think would look not just in case anybody thinks I was being disparaging about the way Kilkenny play hurling. I just think Kilkenny can play hurling any way you want it. They can play it high up or low down, and I think the fact that it is in winter, I think, will absolutely it'll make no odds to them where it will affect some other teams. So I think they'll win Leinster. I think Tipperary will win Munster, and I think it probably will be a traditional final. But I would expect Tipperary to win. I just think they have a depth that nobody else can match, not even Limerick. They're quite lucky at the minute. They don't seem to have been hit with injuries in the same way that a lot of the other counties maybe have. And I think that two in a row thing is bugging them a small bit. And I think it bugs Liam. You know, they haven't put back-to-back All-Irelands together since Hell's Kitchen in the 60s, which for a county with a tradition like Tipperary is probably a record that should be rectified. And I think they'll do that this year.
Brendan?
Well, just replay what Rory said there. I'd be happy enough to go absolutely. I think with the depth they have, looking at the under-20s coming in, forwards especially, the forwards are going to be key when it's sloppy weather and all that kind of stuff. Who can put the ball over?
Because you were a bit light on forwards there, so it's good to get drafted another couple.
Yeah, we have to get a few more, you know. But yeah, it is. So I think, Tipperary. I think Tip will win Munster, I think. Even though Limerick will have a bit of momentum if they do beat Clare, but I think Tip will win Munster and go all the way, I think, and win the All-Ireland. But Kilkenny are the ones I'd be probably most afraid of if I was in Tipperary in All-Ireland semi-final, because I think Kilkenny are going to jump the fence in Leinster as well, because they just know how to do it. And they're like an old club team for all the world that just know how to win. And when you sit in the dressing room afterwards, you go, we should have bet them, but you didn't, like, you know. And if they are going to go down, you'll have to beat them by 5 or 6, because beating them by a pint, they just, whatever they have, Ballyhale factor, I don't know what it is, but they're just, they know to do it. But I think Tip would win it out inevitably to finish. By the time we get to Christmas week, we'll have a lockdown little drink in Tipperary, isolated in our own homes.
Blue and gold Santa hats.
Yeah, 100%.
Ursula, are you going to make it? Are you going to make it a hat trick of Tipperary All Ireland here? Or are you going to fight the good fight?
I'm going to go slightly different. I think potentially maybe Limerick might edge Tip in All Ireland. I think Limerick actually do have the strength and depth in the panel. Obviously, Mike Casey and potentially Richie English are going to be two huge losses in defence. But I looking at some of those club championship games in Limerick as well, I do think there's the depth and the talent there. I think they have the strength in the panel. They were very unlucky not to reach an All-Ireland last year, and I think that might be a bit of a driving factor this year. If they can get over Clare, they'll have good momentum going into that Munster semi-final, and I think the further they progress, I think the more dangerous they're going to be. So I'm tipping Limerick slightly. Sorry, Brendan.
And who's going to win Leinster?
And then in Leinster, I suppose, I probably agree with the guys. I think it's hard to maybe look past Kilkenny. As much as that kills me at the moment, I just worry with the injuries that Wexford are experiencing. I think it might be difficult for them. So I'm tipping Kilkenny for Leinster.
And the All-Ireland then?
I'm going for Limerick.
Okay. You're all wrong. Wexford are going to win. They're also somehow going to win Munster.
Wouldn't that be some crack for Wexford winning? And yeah, I have to say one thing, Mikey, you mentioned earlier as well, and I think it is worth repeating. It's North County feeds off their supporters like Wexford, and I'll never ever forget the 2003 and 2004 semi-finals, Cork, and it was one of my first kind of jaunts up to Croke Park again when we came across Wexford. I mean, crack. And thousands and thousands of them, like, I mean, thousands of supporters. There's nobody gets in behind their team quite like the Wexicans, as John Mulan calls them. So look, you'd hope they'll have a good year, but don't win it, because it would be cruel for Wexford to win one and basically have no supporters there to enjoy it.
Well, I think Tony Holden would have a heart attack anyway if Wexford won the All-Ireland. It'd be like, it's the equivalent
or
of
Mayo in the football.
Exactly, I was about to say, it's the equivalent of Mayo winning the football.
Lock Wexford down, yeah.
Before we go, 11-12. Go on, Brendan.
We'd have to have 11-12 lockdown on the 13th of December. I'll tell you one thing. You'd have to go to Man to celebrate, but they'd manage to get there if they won it, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Ursula, just the Camogie Championship throws in this weekend, which is great again, because there was fears that any of these championships would take place. So to get them up and running is fantastic. But obviously, it's not been a very auspicious start. Kind of on the day that the championship was officially launched by the Camogie Association, Offaly pulled out of their opening round match against Cork, which it just highlights a multitude of problems, especially in the current climate, doesn't it?
Yeah, look at it. It's far from ideal for Offaly. And as I mentioned earlier, it's not what Cork would have wanted either, because they wanted a game to get under their belt before they were going to be playing Galway in the group stages. And that a game between Cork and Galway is going to really prove crucial, because you'd expect whoever wins that game will finish on top and will go straight into a semi-final. So Cork will probably, they'll have Wexford next in the group stages, and then they'll play Galway in the final game. But look, we've a really good championship to look forward to. You know, the structure is good. There's five or six teams there that will be battling out to get into a quarter-final, semi-final. Probably the two outside teams that I'd give a chance to would be the likes of Tip and Waterford. You know, Tip have reached the semi-final the last couple of years, and they're improving each year. Bill Mullaney is back over him again, and I think he has a good structure in place, and they've lots of young talent. So I definitely think they're going to feature in the knockout stages. And Waterford, they've got Dan Shannon involved this year, Fergal O'Brien, two guys that have been involved with Waterford hurling. And to me, they were fierce unlucky not to beat Galway in the quarterfinal of the championship last year. You know, they really had Galway for about 40-45 minutes of that game, and maybe a little bit of inexperience, younger players, maybe they tired slightly, and the likes of Dan coming in can bring on a team like that, because he's huge experience, he's played at such a high level, and he can raise the standard. So I think Waterford are going to be a dark horse in the Camogie Championship this year.
Yeah, is it hard to, do you actually think they could win it, or like, because it's kind of, It always seems to be a two-horse race, the Camogie Championship, whether it's... But the two change at least. But at the moment, it's hard to... Most people from the outside who kind of follow it loosely enough mightn't look too far beyond Kilkenny and Galway.
Yeah, Kilkenny, I suppose the top three in the last kind of 5-6 years would be Cork, Kilkenny and Galway. You know, Galway kind of made the breakthrough last year, and it was, you know, probably overdue, because that Galway team, you know, are so talented. They've a great bunch of girls involved, and Cathal Murray is an excellent manager, so he kind of broke the mold that was there. You know, Cork and Kilkenny were playing All-Ireland after All-Ireland, and you know, it wasn't that it was becoming boring or anything. It was great to see a new team in the final, though, because it changed the whole the momentum coming into the final, the buzz, because it was a new team coming into it. And it was probably one of the better All-Irelands in recent years. And Galway, you know, won it in style. And there's some massive players on that team, and they'll be no doubt looking to defend their title.
Will you give us a quick run through on the new rules, Ursula? Because they were kind of, most players were looking for them for quite a while. Basically looking to get the game moving a bit faster and allow a little bit more physicality is the aim, yeah?
That's it. So I suppose the main features of the new rules, which they trialled in the couple of rounds of the league, so allowing more contact, you know, so obviously allowing a certain amount of physicality to the game, which, you know, it should be allowed too, because, you know, all these teams are doing strength and conditioning work and they're becoming stronger. And it's not about dirty play, but it's allowing that little bit more physicality and contact. Then the rule around persistent fouling. So it's just trying to minimise persistent fouling, really. And then the main one for me would be the dropping the hurl and hand passing the goal. I've been a forward for the last 15, 20 years, and I never liked the rule where you could drop the hurl and hand pass. I don't think it's a skill. I think you should be striking. I think the more that these rules are in line with the hurling rules, the better for our game. So I think that's a positive thing. And overall, from the couple of games I saw in the league, I think it actually added to the games. It made the games that bit more physical. The flow was better, and it wasn't a stop-start.
Yeah.
Good.
And we've managed to avoid the first of the dual player clashes for the Cork teams. But I was interested in Ursula. I saw Paddy Murray say that it was the football LGFA's turn to move their fixtures, because for the last, as long as he can remember, when there was clashes for the Cork dual players, it was always Camogie who blinked first. And within hours of him saying that, sure enough, the Camogie Association moved another game. So it seems like the LGFA have the whip hand in that relationship at the moment.
Yeah, and it's becoming frustrating for everyone involved, because, you know, they're anticipating down the line that Cork are going to be there or thereabouts in both ladies football and the Camogie, and there is going to be clashes. And obviously Galway accommodated Cork in that group stage and have moved the fixture. They offered to move, which was very, very good of Cathal Murray and his management team to allow it. But there is going to be problems down the line, because there is going to be a clash at quarter-final stage and semi-final stage. And both, like in the Camogie sense, they're going to be televised. They're going to be featuring on RTE. So and the same with TG Catter with the football.
The
so
NGFA, yeah.
I'm not sure where the compromise is going to be, and it's going to just get messy, I feel.
Yeah, it's just these multi-talented Cork people. They're making problems for themselves. Isn't that right, Rory?
The dual players still alive and well.
Yeah, it's good indeed. Well, look, guys, that was very enjoyable. I mean, we didn't even really talk about COVID-19 that much.
No.
please do also have a listen to the football podcast with Tomás O'Shea and Kieran Whelan and Rory, which does feature a lot more COVID-19, to be brutally honest with you. So the RTE Championship launch has happened, and the games are returning this weekend. We have Armagh and Roscommon in the Allianz Football League Division 2 this weekend. We have Saturday and Sunday Sport. We'll have reports, reaction from around the grounds, which is a lovely thing to say. And the RTE News app and the RTE Sport website will have all the reports as well, analysis, highlights, and all sorts of good stuff. So look, we have a good weekend to look forward to, fingers crossed. So just to say thank you to Ursula and to Brendan and to Rory. And we'll catch you all again next week.
Crucial from this, how much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point, and there's the whistle, it's over! It's over!
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it! It's over the bar! Oh! Holy Moses!
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road. And that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh.